We've had some fascinating conversations with Phil Craig over the years. In fact, he also presented at the BizNews conference in Hermanus this year. And we're going to find out from him what's going on with Cape Independence. Is it still on the table? Is there a government of national unity that's now killed all hopes of that possibility? Is there devolution of powers down to provinces? All of these issues as we go in depth with Phil Craig. Phil, good to be talking with you. RP, Referendum Party. Let's start there. You guys did create a new party because Alan Windey, the Premier of the Cape, was not prepared to allow a referendum of the people in the Western Cape to vote for or against independence. And so you started the referendum party not long before the last election. I looked at the votes and I thought, 3,834 votes nationally, just over 5,000 here in the on the provincial ballot. That seems a little disappointing from an external perspective. How did you guys feel about it?
No, absolutely was disappointing. And I think it's always difficult when you put up a new party. I mean, you know, for us this was a first. And as you said, there were two issues actually. One was that was the referendum, and the other was the Western Cape People's Bill. And that's actually a very significant piece of legislation in the light of what came next. So they were our two red lines, and ultimately we spent a lot of time sort of trying to sort of cajole and lobby the DA to sort of move further down the sort of path of self-determination for the Western Cape. And I mean, ultimately, they weren't willing to either support the Western Cape People's Bill or allow a referendum on Cape independence. That effectively we were left with very little option. I mean, ultimately it was either surrender and accept the DA's limited vision for the Western Cape or to form a party. So we formed a party, and we targeted 100,000 votes, which obviously we knew was always going to be a huge ask. I think only one party had ever achieved that in there, outside of the big parties in the Western Cape. So that was always going to be an ask. But certainly, the total, I think, got 7,100 votes in total, unique voters, and without question, that was a disappointing result. We had to move on from there. Ironically, it was the result that polling suggested was going to happen. We needed to convince DA voters who supported Cape independence to vote against the DA to pursue Cape independence. And at our first attempt, we were unsuccessful in doing so. And of course, that was frustrating. But like any other party, now we have to build from there and move on towards the next election.
So that was May. We are now in December, so a lot of water has flowed under the bridge. You're still wearing the RP colours, so clearly the party hasn't disappeared. What exactly have you been up to, and what's next for you?
No, absolutely. So, I mean, look, it's so many ways for Cape independence. Look, maybe I'll go back a step and say, what did we say was going to happen? We said before the last election, look, the multi-party charter is absolutely doomed to failure. And actually, if we don't vote to take control of our own destiny, we're going to end up with an ANC government still in charge. And unfortunately, that's exactly what happened. So we had the unfortunate situation of being absolutely right in our predictions of what was going to happen, but unable to get people to see the significance or the seriousness of the issue and to vote the way that we would have liked them to have voted. And that then put us in a situation where really we have to just be patient. So now we had these two options. We said, look, this whole notion of a coalition government is just not going to work. The DA said, no, look, we can make this multi-party charter work. Ironically, we must get rid of the ANC at all costs, and that's obviously become a very ironic situation. But here we are now. We had the GNU, undoubtedly, given the two options after the election of the GNU or the Doomsday Coalition. The GNU was the most sensible option, and we're happy about that. So effectively now the DA's alternative to our proposal is on test, and we have to be patient for people to work out for themselves that the GNU is never going to be the solution or anything else. And what's behind that, and that's why that Western Cape People's Bill is so significant, is really South Africans or Western Cape people in the Western Cape and other cultural groups too are faced with a choice. Do they accede to this unitary state where the sort of the in majoritarianism, we have the majority making decisions on our behalf, regardless of what we want? Or do we assert our right to self-determination and say, well, look, you know, actually, we can see we're permanently at odds with the majority, and we want to make decisions for ourselves. We have a right, and we want to assert it. And I think that's what we're set up with now. The GNU is a continuation of the unitary state. It's an acceptance that you know, you're just going to go with what the majority of South Africans want, whether you voted for it or not. And now that's on test. And of course, you know, the GNU, you can see enough already. The GNU is not going to work. It's business as usual. It's not going to collapse. But I mean, we've just continued with the same old policies, the same old government, and we're going to continue with the same old outcomes. That's the reality, and eventually people will start to realize that this isn't the solution. I think that then creates a huge opportunity for us to then sort of come back and say, right, okay, well, you didn't believe us first time round. Now you've seen the proof of the pudding. Are you going to believe us the second time round? And that's where we definitely will then start to get some momentum.
You said a lot there, which I'd like you to elaborate on. Let's just begin with the point that the ANC will continue ruling. Is that your perception, given that it's created the Government of National Unity, that it's continuing to rule, as just perhaps with a few others in the tent?
Well, I think it's the DA's perception, never mind our perception. It absolutely is our perception. I mean, but we only have to look at, you know, at the key policies that we have. You know, have we been able to stop the Bella Bill? No. Have we been able to stop the NHI Bill? No. Do we continue with BEE and employment equity and race-based policy? Yes, we do. Have we had some radical change in economic policy that suddenly is now pro-business? Absolutely not. Effectively, we've carried on with the same suite of policies that we had before the election. Yeah, we now have got, you know, some capable ministers who probably could administer their government departments a little better than their predecessors. But I mean, that's not the level of change that we need to have. Ultimately, we're just pursuing the same policies, and we'll see it. We said when the GNU first came out, we said, look, as a party, we're not going to undermine the GNU at the beginning. That's not our job. Yes, the Africans have said this is what they want. So what we did instead is we put out a statement. We said, look, if the GNU is going to work, let's take some objective measures and say, well, what should the GNU achieve? And at that point in time, we put three down there, and we said that ultimately economic growth within 18 months should be above 3%. We said that unemployment within 18 months should be below 30%. And we said that the murder rate in South Africa should fall below 30 people per 100,000. And we talked to experts in the field, and all said with sensible policies, all of those things were achievable. Well, it's already clear we're going to get absolutely nowhere near achieving those. And those weren't high bars. I mean, we're still talking about chronically high unemployment, chronically low growth, and one of the highest murder rates in the world. But we can't even achieve that. And I think, ultimately, that, as you say, the DA themselves are expressing this constant exasperation that, hang on a second, you're just governing as if you had the majority, and that's the truth. And I feel sorry for the DA. Their backs are against the wall in the concept of unitary state. But I'm also furious with them for just refusing to accept that the answer is for us to not have a unitary state, which shouldn't be a challenge for them, given that they're a federal party in name, but they obviously have done absolutely nothing to deliver federalism, which is clearly the first step.
That's a really interesting take on things, because the Doomsday Coalition prospect, would that have advanced your cause, do you think, or would that have, were that to have happened? So in other words, the DA decides it's going to pull out of the Government of National Unity, let's just say, because the difference has not been there. We've seen through history where you've been the smaller party in a coalition that you get punished next time round. If they take that step, then the Doomsday Coalition is a possibility, and there are many people in the ANC who want it. Would you see that as a positive development? Clearly, the investment markets wouldn't.
No, I wouldn't. Look, ironically, it's one of those situations. Would it be great for our cause? Absolutely. But actually, you have to remember what is our cause is about. It's about improving lives for the people of the Western Cape, and actually, by extension, the people in South Africa. and the Doomsday Coalition wouldn't. So we're certainly never calling for the DA or any other party to pull out of the GNU. And what we're calling for them is in parallel to that. And what we need to do, and certainly once we get elected, it's something we'll push. And we're already we've got two pieces of legislation we're working on that we're going to push from outside of Parliament, because what we're pushing is for people to actually start to assert their rights on the side. And we have to understand that, if I look at most of our voters, they are ideological minorities. They're in the Western Cape and they think differently to the majority. They're cultural minorities. They're different. They're geographical minorities. So we've got people who are trapped, but were minorities in this country. So why would we just blindly always agree to go along with this majoritarian unitary state? We're destined to forever be losers. And the obvious solution is to change the system, which in theory is what, if I talk about the DA, what federalism is supposed to be all about, and saying, well, look, we don't want to have a one size fits all set of policies. Actually, we kind of want to have power. I don't want to use devolved because devolution I don't think is enough, but power distributed to the provinces, to different communities, so ultimately we can start to deal with the issues that are facing South Africa in a way that is appropriate to the people or the region that we're talking about. And obviously in our context that's clearly the Western Cape. So what we'd like to see is the Western Cape, the DA in the Western Cape, or the Western Cape government, asserting its right to self-determination. It's asserting its right to set its own economic policies, asserting its right to collect its own taxes, asserting its right to take control of railways and policing. Because if it does that, it can, they may differ with us in terms of the end solution, but as the first solution, if they do that, if they assert that right, and bearing in mind that the right to self-determination is an undeniable, unquestionable legal right, the Western Cape can assert its right to self-determination. And what we're saying is stop asking this ANC government for permission and start asserting the rights that you have, because that is in the long term the only future. Where that ends up is a secondary concern. But actually, until we start asserting the rights that we have, we're just going to forever be price takers in this system, and we're going to permanently be on the losing end. And that's where we are. And we don't need to leave, or maybe just leave the GNU to do that. Actually, that starts within the Western Cape government, within the Western Cape Parliament. And that's where that should start. And ironically, I think other cultural communities should do the same thing. And that's apart from the GNU.
It's interesting to notice that there was a lot of this assertion of rights ahead of the election, but now that everyone's in the same tent, that seems to have taken a back seat. And I just think about Cape Town and Jordan Hill Lewis and the way that he went ahead and kicked down the door, as he described it, on the electricity story. But that now appears, just from the outside, you're following it a lot more closely, as though it's fallen lower down the agenda, because perhaps of real politics. What is your reading of the situation?
Well, no, you're absolutely right. So what John Steenhuisen is on record, you can go to the DA's website, it's still there. On our very first day in government, we will table a devolution bill for the Western Cape. Well, 150 days into government, no bills appeared. And that's absolutely the case. I think when it comes to the Western Cape, it's slightly different. I think... obviously you've got these two centres of powers. You've got the city of Cape Town, which accounts for about 70% of the Western Cape's population, and you've got the Western Cape government. And I think in general, there are only things I would differ with Jordan on, but I think Jordan is much more assertive. And I think he retains that desire to push the envelope and to take the fight to government. And I think the challenge is that Alan Windey absolutely doesn't. And if you were to sort of take the DA's different components, perhaps the most radical is the city of Cape Town and Jordan Hill Lewis. Then I think you'd have the National Party, which is less radical than the city of Cape Town, but way more radical than the Western Cape government. And then you've got Alan Windey, who's as wet as a paper bag and doesn't want to have any fights, doesn't want to upset the apple cart, doesn't want to. And actually, Alan is the primary source of the problem. I mean, bear in mind, the Western Cape government the DA have had an outright majority for 15 years in the Western Cape government. And we've got our constitution full of concurrent powers. How many bills have the DA in their 15 years passed? None. Not one. They haven't passed any bills that make use of these concurrent powers. And in fact, we're at the point in time where we've currently written one. Let's take a good example, the PIE Act, the Prevention of Illegal Evictions Act, which is the act that's responsible for these mushrooming illegal settlements all over the Western Cape. Now, we've got the National Act, which is just terrible. And the DA know it's terrible. So the National DA has tabled a constitutional amendment, an amendment to the PIE Act in the National Parliament, but obviously can't get it passed because they haven't got a majority. But housing is a concurrent competency. They can take exactly the same act that they're trying to pass at National Parliament and can't, and they can table it in the Provincial Parliament and pass it with an outright majority. But in 15 years, they haven't done it. So here you've got a situation where they've just got an open goal, and actually the Western Cape government is just refusing to shoot at it.
Why?
Well, yeah. So, yeah, I guess that's a question for the DA. That will be the source of our frustration. Look, we've written the act. We're not going to call it the Provincial PIE Act. We're going to call it the Provincial Illegal Settlements Act. But we've written it, and we're going to get public support for it, and we're going to send it to the committee, and we're going to see if we can get that bill tabled. And obviously, it's difficult for us being outside of Parliament. But I mean, this isn't technical. And ironically, we've written that bill by taking the DA's own bill, making a couple of amendments to it, and we're actually going to hand it back its own bill and say, why don't you just pass this bill in the Provincial Parliament? And I think this is our frustration and the issues that actually, you know, the DA talk a fight on devolution, they talk a fight on federalism, but they've done absolutely nothing to deliver it. And actually, people in the Western Cape are suffering significantly as a consequence. I mean, we're about to see teachers being laid off. We've got a governmental dispute over budgets. We've got the ongoing dispute over policing. We've got this fight over rail. And all of these things that actually the Western Cape government can resort through its own provincial parliament. And that was the key of the Western Cape. We said at the start there were two issues. It's not just the referendum. The other one was the Western Cape People's Bill. Well, the Western Cape People's Bill was a really profound bill, and it said, we exist as a people. It says so in our constitution, the Western Cape Constitution, and we have a right to make our own decisions. And it didn't say anything more than that. It didn't say what those decisions must be. It simply claimed and said, we're going to take the right away from national government, and we have the right to make decisions for ourselves. And the DA effectively blocked a bill that would have said the Western Cape has the right to make decisions for itself. Now, yeah, maybe you can make more of sense of that than I can, but I mean, that's the reason why the referendum party exists. It's not because we have any axe to grind with the DA's government of the Western Cape. I think they administer it very well. It's their total lack of ambition and the consequences on the people of the Western Cape, who will just be immeasurably better off if they can just grow a backbone and take this national government on.
If I listen carefully to what you're saying and extrapolate after a little bit of reflection, it would appear that the DA is scared of upsetting its GNU partner, and as a consequence, it won't be tabling anything that's going to make the ANC really angry or angry enough to say, we don't want to be with you in this coalition or GNU anymore. Is that your interpretation?
No, it isn't, fun enough, because all of this predates the GNU. My interpretation is this, and I take it because I've had it straight from the horse's mouth. 70% of our voters are outside of the Western Cape, say the leaders of the DA, and actually we don't want to upset our voters there, so we're going to throw our voters in the Western Cape under the bus. But I think they badly misjudged that situation, and I think their voters and the rest of South Africa are desperate to see that. And ironically, why did the DA... Were the DA able to hold on to power in the Western Cape in this election? Because for the first time ever, the majority of coloured voters didn't vote DA ever since the DA had been in power. In 2024, the majority of coloured voters didn't vote DA, and only a tiny percentage of black voters voted DA. They got into power on the basis predominantly of the white vote. Why? Because in the last decade, 300,000 white voters migrated from the rest of the country into the Western Cape. And that's how the DA was able to hold on to power. So actually, this notion that people in the rest of the country don't want the DA to assert themselves in the Western Cape is nonsensical. I think people outside of the Western Cape understand far better than anybody else how important it is that we create this area of the country for people who hold and share Western values or broadly Western values, because they can see what's going to happen in the rest of the country, which is, which is obviously falling apart at the seams. So I think the DA have got that wrong, but that's the reason that, you know, they're absolutely straight on that. They're scared of their voters outside of the rest of the Western Cape, which obviously is very bizarre for a party that calls itself a federal party, because, by very definition, those should be two different decisions.
That also has implications. If the coloured vote has now moved away from the DA, and presumably a lot of it's going towards a patriotic alliance, are you in a position to engage with the leader of the patriotic alliance in this kind of debate? Does Gayton McKenzie, I remember him saying once or twice that he doesn't think Cape independence should be on the table, but is he thinking any differently, given that he's now quite a key member and a high-profile member of the Government of National Unity?
Yeah, look, so let's be clear. The DA was the largest party amongst coloured voters. Think about 46%. I mean, I'm going on Gareth Van Onsen's research, I should say, here. So about 46% of coloured voters voted for the DA, and I think maybe, I don't know what the number was, maybe 20% voted for Gayton McKenzie. So undoubtedly, Gayton McKenzie is growing his influence within the coloured community. If you look in the most cases, he's doing that by taking votes primarily away from the ANC rather than from the DA. But Gayton doesn't really support Cape independence, but actually, without being too disrespectful to Gayton, he ultimately, tends to change his position depending on which way the wind is blowing on an issue. So I think, I think ultimately he will, and maybe that's not a bad thing in terms of if that's respectful of the people that you're voting for, or who are voting for you. And I would, what we know from polling, and people look at that polling and say, look, hang on a second, you said loads of people supported Cape independence, they didn't vote for you, so that polling's wrong. Bear in mind that polling said all of those people are going to vote for the DA. So the polling was absolutely spot on. So we know that the level of support for Cape independence actually is the highest amongst the coloured community. So there's a disconnect. But I mean, look, Gayton's obviously playing his own political game at this point in time. He's a very vocal opponent of Cape independence. And whether that'll change over time, I don't know. I mean, clearly Cape independence is very, very obviously in the best interests of the coloured population, the majority of whom who live in the Western Cape and who ultimately would enjoy political hegemony in an independent Western Cape. So that clearly is in their best interest. And they know it. That's what polling shows.
I guess he is also a vocal supporter of the Government of National Unity, and as a consequence of that, anything that threatens a Government of National Unity. But the one thing I have found with Mr. McKenzie is that he does change his mind after being exposed to different points of view, and perhaps there's an opportunity there for you. Just going forward, though, what is it that you guys have just got? You got so few votes. Relative to what you need to make an impact. You don't have anybody in the Cape Parliament, let alone in the National Parliament. What? How much patience do you require, or at what point in your journey do you say, look, these people are not listening. We're not going to break through. Let's just stop wasting our effort.
Yeah, look, and a fair question. I mean, look, so the referendum party was 6 months old. We were a bunch of amateurs. None of us had a political background. And to put that into context, I think the DA spent 250 million rand. We spent 1 million rand. That they have free run of any newspapers. The mainstream media, News 24, Daily Maverick, refused to run any article. You won't find a single article ever referencing us. So our work was cut out. So whilst the elections were disappointing, we also have to keep them in context. We were a 6-month-old political party, and ironically, if we're talking about Gayton, if you go back 10 years, we performed exactly as Gayton performed 10 years ago. So I think the answer is that we have to be patient from our side. When do we give up? Will we give up either if it's all lost and we're living in a failed state and it's no longer functional and we can't carry on, or some other solution emerges which solves the problem? Because ultimately this is about securing a future for our families as opposed to any particular ideology. And I think that's where we've always pushed. And let's just take the first step first. But I think, ultimately, we went into these elections with people saying, look, it's the multi-party charter, which everyone's now forgotten, or the doomsday coalition. The DA was successful in convincing everybody that the multi-party was the solution, and maybe, just maybe, they could get 50%. We were on the sidelines saying they've got no chance of getting 50%. They're lying to you. They're never going to get much above 30%. I think they got 31% or whatever the number was in the final score. And that was just a classic case of the marketing power that managed to convince people of this story, which even the DA never, ever, ever even remotely believed was possible. I mean, it was and obviously there's frustration with that. But now the reality is there, and as the GNU unfolds, I'm sure you've picked it up. We certainly have. People are starting to sense their frustration, and we haven't even got started. We've got the big fight over Bella. We've got an even bigger fight over NHI coming down the line. We've actually written the non-racialism bill, and we're trying to push that issue because we're stuck with non-racialism. The Western Cape now is having has got huge budgeting problems. And bear in mind that, for example, the teacher strike is about to lay off 2,400 teachers. Because it's got a 3.8 billion rand shortfall, and the Western Cape contributes net 300 billion rand a year to the national government in excess. That's its net contribution. So, the Western Cape now is starting to suffer as a consequence of not doing those things. And ultimately, this will play itself. I would love it to have played out in 2024. I'm disappointed that it didn't. But I think this fight is far from over, because actually what's on our side is the truth and reality. And you can't run away from the truth and reality. You can spin it for so long. And that's what we're going to see in this GNU, is ultimately people realize, well, nothing's changed. We're not about to have 10% economic growth. We're not about to have some 10% unemployment. And we're not suddenly that become this safe utopia where our children can walk the streets. And people are going to become increasingly aware that nothing much has happened with the GNU, and the GNU isn't the solution. And our job is to point out the reason it's not the solution is because you're in a unitary state where you're signing up to a system where winner takes all, the majority make all the decisions, and you're a minority and always will be. And until you grasp that fact and realize that you have to that you have to start asserting your rights as minorities, ideological minorities, cultural minorities, that's the only way that you can secure a future for yourself, because it takes control away from the national government and it puts the control back into the hands of your community, and that ultimately is how we will save ourselves.
That 300 billion number versus what the Western Cape is losing on its teachers. Just unpack that for us a little more, exactly what you mean by that and where the source of that information is.
So unfortunately, it's from an economic impact study that hasn't been released. It's due to be released, but it's not mine. So whilst I've had sight of it, it's not my position to release it. But it's very, very similar to the figures that I've always made. So effectively, 35% of the Western Cape's income subsidizes South Africa. Gauteng and the Western Cape are the only two provinces that pay into our system, and everybody else draws down. Now, the numbers that I've always done is taken, you can take that fairly simplistically. You can say, okay, well, what's the Western Cape's contribution to GDP? It's about 14%. What percentage is the population of the Western Cape? It's about 12% of South Africa's population. And what percent of the provincial allocation, in other words, the money that national government gives back to provinces, does the Western Cape get? And the answer is 10.2%. So we pay 14% in, we get 10.2% back. Obviously that's a very simplistic calculation, and it assumes that all the services that the Western Cape gets that the national government pays for, it now provides for itself and is no better or no worse. It's kind of a cost neutral argument. But that delivers about a 30% increase to the Western Cape. And ironically, this economic impact study, which is extraordinary detailed, and a tax flow study, comes up with basically the same number, and it finds that 35% of the Western Cape's tax revenue is subsidizes South Africa. So that's the reality of our numbers. And I get there's always going to be some cross subsidization. It's not, we're arguing for no cross subsidization, but it's a bitter pill to swallow when actually that money is going to the rest of the country to be stolen and looted and wasted, and you can't actually fund teachers in your own province.
Yeah, it's a compelling argument. But through history, you've had minorities within bigger unitary states. Has something happened in society, in geopolitics, that makes you confident that your message is going to be heard in future?
Yeah, well, so the right of self-determination, ironically, is only about 120 years old, 110 years old. I mean, it's a right that sort of started off as a sort of a rudimentary, I think, around the First World War, and the recognition that actually if you don't let people, assert themselves and you allow these big dominant states just to bully everybody around, ultimately that resolves in conflict. And the way to avoid conflict is to allow people to take control of their own destiny. And that is a right that sort of moved through then decolonization and all of that process through the 60s and 70s, and ultimately has become what is a peremptory norm, or a Just Kogan's right of international law, which South Africa, ironically, is repeatedly sworn to. The bizarre things about self-determination is that the South African government is one of the most outspoken advocates for self-determination for Palestine, for Western Sahara, for the South Sudan. But actually, wants to run a mile when the Western Cape or Afrikaners or Zulus want to assert their right to self-determination in South Africa. But ironically, they've sworn three different international treaties we've signed and ratified since 1994, which guarantee that right. I mean, it's not a right. And interestingly enough, South Africa's case to the ICJ is based on something called Erga Omnes Partes, which is, whilst we're not involved in the conflict between Palestine and Israel, It's that because we're a signatory to the Genocide Convention, we have an obligation under international law, erga omnes, to enforce the rights on behalf of the Palestinian people. And that's their argument. It was accepted by the ICJ. Now, interestingly enough, self-determination is an erga omnes obligation. Any other country in the world is entitled to enforce the Western Cape's right to self-determination. Afrikaners. So actually, South Africa is setting precedents that are extraordinarily beneficial for Cape independence. And that's the way that the world has moved on. And here we are. The bottom line is we didn't create the Western Cape. The British government didn't create the Western Cape. Afrikaners didn't create the Western Cape. Modern South Africa in 1994, 1996, its new constitution created the Western Cape. It's here. It's got a government. It's given itself a constitution. The Western Cape exists. And by existing, it has a right to self-determination. The Western Cape Constitution establishes the Western Cape people. In its opening lines, in humble submission to Almighty God, we, the people of the Western Cape. And international law is absolutely clear. All people have a right to self-determination, an undeniable, unquestionable right to self-determination. And that's what the People's Bill was all about. Just saying, well, we've got this right. We're going to assert it. We don't necessarily need to assert it in the form of Cape independence, but let's assert it in the form of devolution. Let's assert it in the form of... But the difference is, it's the Western Cape standing up saying, we're not going to ask you, ANC, for this power. We're going to say that we have a right to self-determination and we want that power because it's our right to have it. And that's a fundamental difference that has to go on in our body politic and is going on in our body politic. It just hasn't reached the top yet. I mean, that's what's behind Zulu self-determination. That's what's behind Afrikaner self-determination. That's what's behind Cape independence. And actually, you're going to have more and more Me Toos. And ultimately, the decentralization of South Africa is an inevitability. The format is not.
Which brings us to a couple of the points that you made. If you look back at the 1994 provincial elections, Zulu self-determination is clearly it's a wave that is growing. If you had voted for the MK party in that election and you ended up with 46% of the vote, but your party is not represented in the government, you might be feeling a little bit irked. Is that an ally for Cape independence? Have you reached out to them and said, look, here are the rules as we understand them from an international community's perspective? You can also follow a similar thing because you might just get quite a ready listening ear there.
No, look, so have we worked with the people behind Zulu independence? We absolutely have. Have we shared that? Yes, we have. So, look, obviously, and the MK situation is a difficult one for me. I mean, at the end of the day, Jacob Zuma stands for everything that I despise. So, I'm loath to, but at the same time, I have to recognize, as somebody who says all people have a right to self-determination, that the people of KZN, however insane their choice may have been, have every right to feel aggrieved that effectively the other parties are sort of contrived deny them their democratic will, effectively, or most people their democratic will. So I have some sympathy for there. It's a difficult one. But I mean, yes, we have for over a prolonged period of time been in touch with the Zulus, and Zulu self-determination would be very helpful for us, provided it took place in a sort of a peaceful. Bear in mind that our fight is peaceful, democratic, constitutional, so we're very much following the law and doing this the right way. And I think that would be the biggest question mark around MK, who want to sort of tear the constitution up, have a different approach to us. But I think clearly that's something that's on the rise. And it's not just Zulus. Ironically, one of the things that we've started to see ourselves as people who would instinctively rail against Cape independence, probably because that, let's say people who would come from sort of rural black communities and they heard it's bad, often very quickly change their mind if it's kind of like, well, don't fight us, wouldn't you rather have that for yourself? And suddenly somebody's saying, well, actually, you know what, yeah, Botswana was much better for us than what we've got now, and yes, actually, in the day, things are much worse for us in the Transkei than they were, and so on. So and I think that's a sentiment that is very much going to come over the next few years as we continue to not make much progress with the unitary state.
Well, the world is changing dramatically. We've had in the last 10 days a 54-year dictatorship being overthrown in 10 days in Syria, and the whole power of Iran and the way it was manipulating things in the Middle East now is brought into a different scenario. So I suppose when one looks forward, you really just don't know what's going to happen. But what would be a tipping point for you? What would you see happening here in South Africa that would make you believe that your fight has not been in vain, and indeed that the people who had closed minds towards this, which for them at the moment would appear chaos, would actually see it as a better option?
No, look, and I think our fight has really not been in vain. I think we fundamentally changed the political landscape. We might not have got votes and got into parliament yet. But what we absolutely have done is we've established Cape independence. It's on the political landscape. Created this much more vibrant discussion then around devolution and federalism. And actually, it's interesting, when I look forward as a party, so what do we look forward to in the future? Well, I mean, the politician that inspires me, and when I talk to people in our party, I say, look, who's the politician that we should most be like? Well, the answer, I always say, is Helen Sussman. There was one MP against 400. You would say it was impossible odds, but who won? Because eventually you just have to be there. You just have to resist all of the insults and the put downs and just keep saying your message, because eventually you can't run away from truth. And I think that's our situation here. That our job is not to get deflated. Our job is not to people want us to hang up the towel. They desperately want me to leave the country. They want us, but we're not. We've got no intention of doing that. We're here, and we're going to keep on saying it, and we're going to keep on saying it, and we're going to be ever present, and increasingly more and more people will come to us. And one of the fascinating things, ironically, and obviously I definitely won't name names, but in this election, I can't tell you how many really senior figures in civil society phoned me up personally and said, I voted referendum party. It was totally awe-inspiring. And it was almost like, okay, well, the intellectuals have got this, the people who are kind of in the know. But actually what we haven't been able to do is get down to the voting masses. And that kind of makes sense. When we ran our focus groups, we had this really fascinating thing that happened. We ran our focus groups for the election, and we ran them for DA voters, because we were primarily targeting DA voters. And we asked them, would they vote for anybody else? And no, they said, no, they vote for the DA. Why did they vote for the DA? Almost every single group said, well, when my pipe burst, the exact example, when my pipe burst, the DA came. And then we said, okay, describe us the kind of future you would like to live in South Africa. And everybody wanted, yeah, they wanted a safe country. They wanted quality services, healthcare, education. They wanted low unemployment. They wanted to reduce poverty. They wanted end to race-based policy. And we asked DA voters, do you believe the DA can deliver that? More than 90% of DA voters don't believe the DA can deliver the future they want. Yeah, well, all they can do is sort of manage their conditions now and make them as comfortable as possible. Palliative care, should we call it? And I think when that penny drops, that's when this, because we're never going to get 50% of the vote. We're not interested in 50% of the vote. What we actually need to do is get into Parliament and get enough leverage for us to be having these debates that you and I are having now on the floor of Parliament and much more in the public eye so that people can, the penny starts to drop. Well, why would we submit to being a permanent minority in a unitary majoritarian regime? What's the point? Particularly when we have an absolute right to assert ourselves. I mean, it's just absolute insanity. But at this point in time, it's not something that people have been willing to vote for, which is a shame.
Phil, we are going into a new world where we have a transactional president in the United States. Is that something that you've considered, having a transactional approach towards this? And what I mean by that is perhaps going to national government or saying that we will go to national government and assume, say, 20% of the debt for the Western Cape. And because we know it's more than we should be assuming, but it is a route out of here. It appears as though the world might be moving much more to that kind of a approach. Much easier to sell it if you work out that, well, instead of spending 20 cents of every budgeted rand, you'd only be spending rest of South Africa 14 cents or 15 cents. I don't know. I'm taking back of the matchbox or back of the cigarette box numbers and just suggesting whether you'd looked at that to go more of a transactional you get this and and we get that way of clearly at the moment the government's not going to listen to you, but if you were to get the public to kind of get that, might that not be a strong hand to have at the table?
No, look, so absolutely, and it's something that we've gone on record. I mean, one of the things I've spoken about particularly is this relationship between the Western Cape and the Eastern Cape. Obviously, we've got this massive problem with vast numbers of people who are not migrating legally but settling illegally, and that has a huge impact on the Western Cape, and particularly the people that were already there whose services are then compromised. And actually, you can either take this antagonistic approach about, let's close the border and just sort of keep people out, or you can take an approach that says, well, look, you know, clearly the Western Cape and the Eastern Cape are historically linked, and they have so why don't we opt to say, right, we'll take a portion of our money and try and help to develop the Eastern Cape, so that actually we don't have this situation where the sort of the push pressures are less, and so I absolutely would favour a transactional approach. I think what's missing for us is we have to look, and it comes back to the same point. What does polling show? That an awful lot of people are sympathetic to the idea of Cape independence. They could, you know, if there was a referendum and they had to choose yes or no, they'd choose yes. They would be, but actually, they're not motivated to the point. They're not going to change their vote. They're not going to vote against the DA. You know, ultimately, they're not taking to the streets in vast numbers. You know, it's, as we call it, soft support. And what we've got to do first is firm up some of that support. We've got to create a situation where people start standing up for themselves, because ultimately we can only be a mouthpiece. And if people are going to accept the status quo, there's a limited amount we can do. Although I should say on the referendum, you probably picked up that we are making preparations for a private referendum. In other words, we've given up trying to convince the DA to hold a referendum. They're not going to do it. They promised they would. They broke their promise. Actually, there's precedent for this. The Italian province of Veneto is held an independent, its own private referendum on independence. Ultimately, they reached an agreement on autonomy, and we're just going to do the same thing. But even then, there's no point in holding that referendum until the political circumstances are right. You know, we have to wait until the GNU quite clearly in everybody's eyes isn't the solution. And so we'll have to pick our moments. And obviously that will create a huge amount of momentum. If we pick our time right and we have that referendum and we win that referendum, then obviously that will put a huge amount of pressure onto the Western Cape government. Because ultimately, if we can demonstrate to it unequivocally that this is the democratic will of the people they're governing, then it's something they're going to have to respond to.
So the thousands of people who believe Phil Craig's message, who are referendum party supporters, even overtly or actually, can also think back to a little bit of history I was looking up for, which was intriguing. In 1806, there was a battle between 5,400 British troops who landed at Melkbosstrand and 2,000 Dutch soldiers. The British prevailed. The Dutch surrendered on the 18th of January. There were later peace talks, and the British paid £1.5 million to the Dutch in the Anglo-Dutch Treaty of 1814 to acquire the Cape of Good Hope. So hence my idea about transactional. It's often politicians quite like the fact that they can tell others that they've made money on the deal. And who knows, with the same name as your party, RP, doing as well as it has from nothing, the Reform Party in the UK, that we don't know what the future holds. But if I take one thing out of this conversation, you believe that the logic of your argument will prevail. It's just going to take a while. Phil Craig is the leader of the Referendum Party. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.